Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
You know, I wish this guy I'm having an argument with on Twitter would see that movie clip or whatever. I'm having this stupid Twitter feud with this one guy.
In the middle of a Twitter beef battle right now?
It's not even that.
What for?
So Wyatt Wheeler, of course, the co-host of Sports Talk, which you can listen to on the Jock stations from 4 to 6, he tweeted out an article, because he's a Springfield News Leader guy, about a scenario in which happened in the state championship game in either Class 1 or Class 2. It was against Lamar, one of the top teams, of course, in Southwest Missouri. And St. Lutheran Charles State, or St. Louis St. Charles, excuse me, won the state championship, but they won it on a pretty much a game-winning play. And on that play, there were 12 men on the field for St. Charles, and it was missed. So Wyatt tweets out this article, and the tweet above it says, Lutheran St. Charles State championship-winning touchdown versus Lamar shouldn't have counted, because, rightfully so, there were 12 men on the field. Well, this Twitter user, and I'm not going to give him the time of day because he's just a troll, says, go be a ref if you can do better. There is a nationwide shortage in all of sports. First off, why are you even tweeting that at this guy for an article who spent 30, 40, I don't even know how much time Wyatt puts into these articles. All the writing, all the research, all of whatever he has to does. Why are you making that kind of tweet? And I'm pretty damn sure he didn't even read the article in general, because he probably can't read in general. But anyway, that's besides the point. So then Wyatt quote tweets it, and he has a picture of of this dude's face all zoomed in. And I have I don't know why, but people that have zoomed in pictures or whatever their face when they're frowning, whatever, it's pretty hilarious to me, especially whenever it comes from someone who is beefing with you on Twitter. So I comment on that picture and I laugh. I just put in 5 laughing emojis, actually 4 laughing emojis. And then now the dude is coming at me saying, so just exactly how does it reflect Christian principles to laugh at someone's physical features? Remember, this is a face shot that I'm talking about, not the dude's body or whatever. So just exactly how does it reflect Christian principles to laugh at someone's physical features? Maybe SBU Bearcats should be interested in how you represent them. So now the dude's going after me and what I do for a living. So then I say, 1, my bad, didn't know that was you. 2, you're the one who fired the first shot, so don't get mad at someone else's tweet if you don't know, if you can't take it in response. And then he came at me saying, is this supposed to be an apology? Try harder. 2, it's pretty pathetic, stating a fact that a referee shortage isn't really a shot, which he didn't say. He said, first off, if you think you could be a ref, go, if you think you could be better, then go be a ref, or whatever, if you could do better. If you really want to be sorry, go volunteer, make a donation for kids and special needs sports programs. I have an idea. How about you uninstall Twitter and go outside? It's just I'm so this is one of the biggest reasons why I hate Twitter. You get in these stupid arguments with trolls that have nothing better to do in their life. It's sports related, I guess, but I mean, come on, dude. I was just about to type out my reply saying this isn't an apology, but then we press record. So, how's your day been thus far, Logan?
I mean, it's been okay. I got in the studio pretty early this morning, about 8:30 in the morning. Ran the board for, the sports reporters this morning. Taking over your old position, we're doing some flip flopping. You and I are. You're going to be getting more into the fill in role and running the board for a lot more sporting events and things like that. Meanwhile, I'll be sort of filling in doing what you were doing with sports reporters. So did that this morning, and now we're here doing the podcast. After we couldn't do it yesterday due to the fact that we were hosting Sports Talk from 4 to 6 p.m., always enjoy doing that. We got to talk about a lot of really interesting things on the show yesterday and looking forward to do more of the same today here on the podcast.
Yeah, looking forward to it, obviously, and if I can get off this stupid topic, I will. But, of course, there were sports going on last night. Really a big event in the NBA, in my opinion, was The game of the night between the Boston Celtics and the LA Lakers, a rivalry renewed. The first matchup went to the Celtics in Boston, but the Lakers get revenge, winning it 117-102. I was watching the game highlights earlier this morning at like 4:10, 4:20 in the morning. And based off the highlights, I thought Jason Tatum scored like 50. I mean, the dude was going off, making basket after basket. He only ended up with 34. I know I'm saying that only being
only
facetious.
34.
Yeah, I'm being facetious in saying so, scoring 34 points and collecting 8 rebounds while shooting a nice 13 of 22 from the field. Thank you very much. But in a losing effort, LeBron James encounter had over 30 points, and Anthony Davis had a double-double, scoring 17 points and 16 rebounds. Like I said, LeBron had 30, and Westbrook had 24 points and 11 assists. So marquee matchup against teams that, you know, honestly, Logan, they were expected to do big things, I'd say. I'm not sure, and I want your opinion on this as a Celtics fan. Teams that were expected to kind of be, you know, at the top of their conferences, respectfully, and teams that are both now, right now, 13 and 12.
Yeah, both teams underperforming so far this season, 25 games into the year. So you're closing in on a third of the season already out of the way, and both teams just sort of hovering around 500. Both teams now 13 and 12 on the year, and it's frustrating when I look at certain aspects of this. So of course, the Celtics and the situation with Kemba Walker, which just seems to be the way that it's gone for Celtics point guards in recent memory. Kemba's gone. So you have to bring in a new point guard in Dennis Schroeder. He's done okay. He wasn't great last night. He only scored 10 points. He had 5 assists in 32 minutes played. He's averaging 17.5 points on the year, 4.9 assists. Both of those are, he's 38th in the league in assists, 44th in points. He only had 10 last night on 1 of 6 shooting, but he was 8 of 10 from the free throw line. So the Celtics didn't, aside from Dennis Schroeder, didn't shoot the ball particularly well from the free throw line. They were 20 of 29 last night, which is 69%. Didn't shoot well from behind the arc, aside from Jason Tatum, who was 5 of 7. The rest of the Celtics in the game combined to go a 5 of 26 from the three-point line. They shot 10 of 33 as a team, 30.3%. But for the Lakers, this was one of the better performances I've seen out of this big three so far this season. We saw Anthony Davis finish with 17 points, 16 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He had a plus-minus of plus 17 on the day. And this coming after he caught a lot of heat for, you know, him saying a lot of the blame has been put on Frank Vogel as of late for the Lakers. But right. It's like Anthony Davis is supposed to be a top 10 player in this league. He's supposed to be the best power forward slash center, you know, in the NBA at times, and just hasn't been performing that way. But he played very, very well last night. LeBron James, as you mentioned, 30 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. On 13 of 19 shooting, Anthony Davis was 7 of 13. And then Russell Westbrook, 24 points, 11 assists, a double-double himself, and 36 minutes played on 9 of 16 from the field. So you got the points you needed out of those three guys. A combined 71 points out of those three guys on all three of them shooting better than 50% from the field. That is exactly what you're looking for out of that big three.
Amen.
It is for them to shoot the ball at a 50% clip combined, score 65, 70 points, you know, average about 20 combined, 20 each in the course of a game. And that's going to put you in a position to succeed. If your big three can get you 60 and the rest of the team can get you another 60, 120 points, 110 points is going to win you a lot of basketball games.
For sure.
And we saw that last night. On top of that, Russell Westbrook is a great defender. As we saw with Dennis Schroeder, you know, going 1 of 6 from the field. Marcus Smart was 2 of 7. Those are the two guards for this Celtics team. The Celtics running with two big men, two centers, and they were out-rebounded. I mean, dominantly out-rebounded. The Celtics starting Al Horford and Robert Williams, goodness. I was going to say Roy Williams, but I knew that was incorrect. That's bad on me as a Celtics fan. Both of those guys are centers. Now, albeit undersized, Al Horford's about 6'10", Robert Williams about 6'9", but 34 rebounds for the Celtics, 51 for the Lakers. You're minus 17 in rebounds, you're going to have a rough day, especially offensive rebounds. The Celtics were almost doubled up. 7 offensive rebounds for the Celtics, 13 for the Lakers. The Lakers, in turn, attempted 11 more shots than the Celtics did. The Celtics, 36 of 82 on the game. the Lakers 48 of 93. They shot 51.6% from the field as a team on the day. Rebounding equates to more opportunities for second chance points, and you're going to win a lot of basketball games doing that.
Of course. And, of course, the other action going on last night in the NBA, the Brooklyn Nets were facing the Dallas Mavs, and that game was won 102-99 in favor of the Nets. Switching over topics now to the NFL, and, you know, we kind of talked about the Seahawks here pretty religiously here and just the struggles that they go with being a pretty much a MASH unit. And for those who don't know, watch the TV series MASH. You'll understand what we're talking about here. But they can add on to it now because one of their top defensive players, Jamal Adams, is now out for the season with a torn labrum. I feel bad for Seahawks fans. I really do. Like, this team is so talented, yet they just get riddled with injury after injury after injury. And now you take out one of their top defensive backs, their top defensive player in general, in Jamal Adams, and he's done for the 2020 season. Thus far, racked up 2 interceptions and 9.5 sacks over 24 appearances with the team since he was acquired in 2020. And it's just more or less a nail in the coffin now to a Seahawks team that's desperately trying to stay in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, they just got a win on Sunday against the 49ers, and albeit you get the win, but you lose arguably your best defensive player over the course of this season. 56 solo tackles on the year. You mentioned the 2 interceptions, 5 pass deflections this season for the number 6 overall pick in 2017. Of course, played with the Jets, got traded to the Seahawks, and the Seahawks paying him big money. And now for this second consecutive season, a torn labrum in his left shoulder. He suffered this same exact injury last season, played through the postseason prior to having that surgery in the offseason to repair that torn left shoulder and that labrum in his left shoulder. And again, he did it once again. He's yet to record a sack in this season. After last season, he set an NFL record for sacks by a defensive back with 9.5 last year in just 12 games, which is very impressive. That's just another straw on the camel that is the Seahawks this season with the injuries. And it occurs in a win. You know, you finally got a glimmer of hope with a win against a good 49ers team, albeit the 49ers are dealing with some injuries of their own, as is any team in the NFL this time of year. Not as much as the Seahawks by any means, but you finally get a win after struggling over the last few this season, especially 3-8 going into that game. You know, especially as of late, the Seahawks have really struggled, even since they got Russell Wilson back. They'd lost 3 in a row before taking on the 49ers, and you lose Jamal Adams for the rest of the year. And that's just another addition to that. I mean, the Seahawks are going to finish last in this division.
Yeah.
The Seahawks could theoretically end up with a top 10 pick and could be looking, you know, depending on what Russell Wilson decides to do. I think this season could come down to, who do they decide to keep? Who is going to retain within that franchise? Is it going to be Pete Carroll? Is it going to be Russell Wilson? Because those two have butted heads, especially ever since the decision to throw for it on the goal line in the Super Bowl that led to an interception and blew the Seahawks' chances of a back-to-back, a repeat, which is very, very rare in any sport. It is nearly impossible to repeat in professional or even college sports.
Speaking of which, did you hear the comment that Joe Buck made to Peyton Manning in like the, they were calling a blowout, I believe, or he asked Joe Buck like, how bad is it to talk with Troy Aikman like during blowout games? And Joe Buck referenced the, the Broncos Seahawks Super Bowl game. That was a blowout in of itself. And Eli got a kick out of it. Peyton got a kick out of it. It was really, it was pretty fun. I'll have to look that clip up here afterwards, but yeah, Joe Buck's a pretty funny guy when he's not on the mic, you know, broadcasting games, and he's not that bad of a broadcaster either. I think he gets a little bit too much blame for the comments he makes on the air, but nonetheless, that's besides the point. And the Seahawks, yeah, I mean, first off, they're playing probably the toughest division in all the NFL, in the NFC West. You got good teams like the 49ers, the Cardinals, and the Rams. Cardinals and Rams are surefire to get a playoff spot. 49ers, jury's still out a bit there on if they're going to get a playoff spot. It'll just have to depend on how the others finish in the wild card racing. You really think that Pete Carroll's going to stay around for this anymore with all the college football openings that are going on? I don't think so. I think whenever Russell Wilson says, hey, I want out of here, I think Carroll's going to beat him to the punch and go to the next college football position that's open.
Yeah, there's definitely a precedent for that. Pete Carroll had a lot of success at the college level at USC, and of course, you know, sort of bailed after the debacle that was the USC thing and Reggie Bush and the NCAA investigation. But the Seahawks are just dealing with so much right now, whether it's Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll butting heads. Jamal Adams is now out for the year. Chris Carson has had injury issues. Damian Lewis, their starting guard. Alex Collins, backup running back. Kyle Fuller at center. Brandon Shell, you know, there have been so many injury issues within this team. Marquise Blair, John Ursua, you know, there's so many injury issues going on with this Seahawks team. And even Russell Wilson being back, he's still not 100% healthy. He's dealing with some injuries of his own. So for Pete Carroll, yeah, there could be an opportunity for that. But I don't see Pete Carroll leaving Seattle unless he's asked or told he needs to leave.
Right.
I don't think, and while college coaches are getting paid a lot of money, more than NFL coaches are getting paid, the NFL is the pinnacle. That's, you know, when you get into this business, a lot of people, I should say, when they get into this business, it's about getting to the NFL. You know, whether that be as a coordinator, as a head coach, you know, guys that are coordinators or position coaches at the NFL level, yeah, those guys could take the opportunity and leave and go back to the college level to be a head coach. Off the top of my head, I think of Kirk Ferentz, the Iowa head coach. As an Iowa fan myself, he was an offensive line coach for the Cleveland Browns and under Bill Belichick, and then went back to the college level and was a head coach at the college level and then got to Iowa. And he's been very content being at Iowa ever since. But, you know, there's a lot more precedent for college coaches leaving for the NFL level than vice versa. So I think for Pete Carroll or for Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, I think the only way these guys end up back in the college ranks is if their respective teams say, yeah, you need to go. And if it's a decision between Pete Carroll or Russell Wilson, Pete, you may have to start making some calls to your connections at the Division I level in college football, because I don't think they're going to pick you over Russell Wilson.
Right. And if they lose to the Texans this Sunday, I bet both of them are gone. Imagine if you lose to the Texans. The game is at home, and the Seahawks are a 7.5-point favorite, but I mean, come on, it's the Texans. Come on, you cannot lose to the Houston Texans. And of course, tomorrow we'll have our NFL picks with Chuck Booms and Lucas Harrell. Be sure to be tuned in for that later on this week. Actually, later on here, and saying so the next day, because we'll be recording that and putting that up here this upcoming Thursday. All right, kind of switching back over to the NBA here. We kind of talked about this a little bit yesterday on Sports Talk, but right now, Stephen Curry in tonight's game. Now, will he do it? You know, he can do it, but I highly doubt he will. He has a chance to break the all-time career three-point field goals made record that was set by Ray Allen, gosh, I don't know how long ago. He needs to make, I believe, 15 threes. Am I correct? He needs to make 15 threes in order to set that record, and he has a chance to do that tonight here against the Portland Trail Blazers. That game will be at 9 p.m. for a tip-off on ESPN, and we kind of talked about it yesterday on Sports Talk, how Stephen Curry, just his shooting ability alone has changed the game. It's something that honestly, Logan, will never see again, I believe. In our lives, we'll never see it again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll see it at this level.
Right.
Maybe, you know, unless there's a guy, you know, 20 or 30 years from now that ends up, you know, doing similar things or doing things that Steph Curry does even better. Because that's how, you know, that's how life works. That's how society works. Just the same as sports. That's how technology works, right? It's constantly improving. It's constantly evolving. And that's what we're seeing. You know, I mentioned it yesterday. We had a caller call into the show and ask us, you know, how does Steph Curry and his legacy and the way that he approaches the game and his statistics stack up with Pistol Pete Maravich? And I said on the air yesterday, I said the statistics aren't really what's most important about these two players. It's the way they've revolutionized the way that this just beautiful, elegant, glorious game is played. Pistol Pete Maravich brought that, you know, quote-unquote street basketball style to the mainstream, to the professional basketball ranks, to the National Basketball Association, and it completely changed the way that guards played this game. Without Pistol Pete Maravich, I don't know if we see Allen Iverson come in and do what he did to revolutionize the game. And subsequently, guys like Jamal Crawford and Steph Curry and Kyrie Irving, you know, the way that they go about their ball handling, I don't know if that happens without Pistol Pete Maravich. Because before Pistol Pete, point guards in the league, in the NBA, were primarily, they're just there to facilitate. They're just there to make passes and get guys the basketball in positions to score. Point guards weren't score-first guys like we see in the NBA today from Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Kyrie Irving. You know, we don't see that. Trae Young, Luka Doncic, right? Those guys aren't the way that they, those guys don't play the way they play the game now without Pistol Pete Maravich completely revolutionizing how the point guard position is played. And he played in an era where the three-point line wasn't a thing until his final year in the league when he played for Utah and was subsequently traded to Boston in the 1979-1980 season. So then you see, you know, Larry Bird sort of popularized the three-point line and other guys sort of took that and ran with it, but nobody to the level that we've seen Steph Curry do it. Nobody. I mean, guys would take the ball off the dribble and they, you know, pull up threes or they'd come off a ball screen and just pop it, you know, but nobody to the level that Steph Curry does it. And nobody at the sheer numbers and the percentages that Steph Curry does it at. A 43% three-point shooter for his career and 15 three-pointers away from breaking Ray Allen's record, and he's played in 515 less games than Ray Allen. That's absurd. That's completely absurd to think about, and I mentioned it yesterday. James Harden is about 500 three-pointers below Steph Curry all-time in terms of three-pointers made in a career. And he's played in 115 more games than Steph Curry has, and he has 500 less. And James Harden is a guy that many people say is, you know, one of the best three-point shooters or, you know, in the league today.
Doubt.
And yeah. And Steph Curry just does it better than anybody has ever shot the three, ever. As a spot-up shooter, coming off of ball screens, off the dribble, step-backs, pull-ups, doing it from 35, 45 feet from the basket, just unreal what the guy's able to do. I mean, of course, it's been very popularized, and it goes viral pretty much every time. Him, what he does before games, during his pregame warm-ups, is he'll go, like, into the tunnel 35, 45 feet from the basket, behind the basket, and he'll just chuck it up, and he'll shoot it and bury it. And a video the other day was released of him, like, 15, 20 rows deep in the stands, buried it from 55, 60 feet from the basket. That's just unheard of, unreal to sit there and watch. And you know, Steph Curry is a guy, he's going to become the first player in NBA history to reach 3,000 career three-pointers. And I believe he could play five or six more years in this league. I truly believe that. I don't know if he can continue to do the dribble drives and the step backs, pull-ups, all that thing, all those sorts of things at the same clip that he does right now.
Yeah.
But I think we could see him sort of cater to the way that we saw guys, some of the great three-point shooters of all time, do later in their careers. You know, Jason Terry was one of those guys that could take it off the dribble, ball screens. Ray Allen, another guy. Reggie Miller, they could do those things, but later in their careers, they became more spot-up shooters, specifically Jason Terry and Ray Allen. Became really just specific spot-up shooters, sit in the corner and shoot the three. Steph Curry could continue to do that, even after his ability to drive by guys and do all the crazy dribble moves and the, you know, the spectacular plays that he does to be able to get a ball off, a shot off. When he can no longer do that, he could play another two or three years in this league, just sit in the corner, go off screens, you know, double screens, elevator screens, all those sorts of things, just to get open three-point looks. He can continue to do that. Because one thing that gets overlooked about Steph Curry's game is his shooting ability, yes, and his ability to shoot off the dribble, yes. But he does such a good job when he doesn't have the basketball in his hand going off the ball.
Yeah.
And to get himself open going off ball, going off screens, cuts, back doors, all those sorts of things, to be able to give him a sliver of space to get a three-point shot up. Because that's all he needs. As long as he can get a shot off without you putting a hand in his face, even if it's 6 or 7 inches from his face, you're in trouble. Because he's a 40% three-point shooter, even if you do have great defense on him. That's how good he is.
Indeed, he is. Oh, maybe. Real quickly before we get into our Would You Rather Wednesday, I want to give a quick shout out to the St. Louis Blues. You know, and you probably don't know this, Logan, but in the NHL, you have to dress at least 20 skaters, right? So you have your 12 forwards, your 6 defensemen, then your 2 goaltenders, so that makes it 20. The Blues last night had 19 skaters and 10 forwards. Like I said, you need 12, 6, and 2. 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, 2 goaltenders. To be, I guess, it's kind of the meta, if I could, for lack of a better term, for what you're supposed to do in the NHL. Now, sometimes you can roll with 7 defensemen if you don't have, say, a forward or whatever, but the Blues had to run with 10 forwards and 8 defensemen last night against one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference in the Florida Panthers, and dude, they got a win. They won 4-3 last night in overtime. Pavel Buchnevich scored the game-winning goal 53 seconds into the OT period, and the Blues somehow etched out a win against Florida. They'll be back in action tomorrow night, and yours truly will be in attendance as they will play the Detroit Red... Dude, if I could speak today. The Twitter troll has got me flustered today. If the Blues will play the Detroit Red Wings tomorrow, puck drop set for 7 p.m. The Blues right now 13-8-4, a good record overall, and they are second in the National Hockey League Association Central Division. All right, it is Wednesday, like I just mentioned before I just kind of corrected myself with my language and my speech pathology. I'm telling you, dude, I need your fiance to work with me, and she needs to have countless hourless sessions with myself.
Maybe eventually. She's a little busy right now. She's coming up on – it's the week before finals, so all her big projects are due and everything, and she's studying for finals right now, so – she's a little overwhelmed at the moment.
I bet. But, I mean, after she gets her degree, and I'm sure she will, she'll do it in no time. I probably need to get her number. But, anyway, that's besides the point. Today is Wednesday, and it is time for another session of Would You Rather Wednesday here on the Rookie Sports Report podcast. I'm not 100% sure when the last time we did this, because the previous time before we recorded the podcast with Booms and Lucas, our last podcast was on Veterans Day, November the 11th. Yeah. So I'm not sure the last time we had a Would You Rather Wednesday, so I do apologize if, you know, my question is a little bit kind of dry or perhaps maybe not as entertaining, but, dude, we've been out of this for such a long time. We got to get back into it. It's just like riding a bike. You know how to do it. You just got to get back on the pedals.
Mm-hmm.
So I first want to ask you this on this Would You Rather Wednesday. This is a true Kansas City sports fan question.
Okay.
So, Taylor, just for you, my friend. Who would you rather see win another who would you rather see win another national championship? The Chiefs or the Royals?
The Chiefs.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, for multiple reasons. You know, I'm not a huge baseball fan. I mean, I like baseball. I'll watch it occasionally. I like playing the game of baseball, but I have difficulty, you know, sitting down and watching a 9-inning baseball game. I know that that sounds, you know, I may get roasted for that, and I know, you know, that's just a cliche about the younger generation of, you know, people our age, that we just don't have the attention span for something like that with baseball.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's an attention span issue. I think it's just, you know, when I watch a football game or when I watch a basketball game, there's just so much more energy to it. There's so much more passion and camaraderie and pageantry behind it versus the game of baseball. And baseball has so many more issues besides, you know, just getting people to watch. There's so many things surrounding baseball and Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball that they need to get in check that it makes me hesitant to watch. You know, the CBA and the issue there and the lockout that we're having now because the owners are greedy and Rob Manfred refuses to do anything about it. I don't have any respect for Major League Baseball and the way that the higher-ups, the executives, the owners, the Major League Baseball administration has for the way they go about their game. I just don't have any respect for it. But I am a football fan. And the NFL, not to the level of the NBA necessarily, but Roger Goodell and the NFL have done a much better job of allowing these players to dictate their own futures. To, you know, they've done things that have allowed for more freedom within the players themselves to take control of their own lives, whether that be through advertising or which team they decide to play for once their rookie contracts are done with. you know, the legal side of things with the legalization of marijuana and stuff like that that the league has now gotten rid of that's allowed for players that, you know, were really being belittled and slandered for something that is really not that big of a deal. I love the way that the NFL has gone about their business compared to the MLB, and I'm more of a Chiefs fan than I am a Royals fan. I sort of always have been. You know, I like the Royals. I root for the Royals, but I'm a Boston Red Sox fan at heart. It's difficult because I can't really watch the games, but I grew up a Celtics fan because there was a player for the University of Iowa that played for the Celtics, and so I just sort of started catering towards Boston sports a little bit. I never really got into hockey, so that was sort of out of the question. If I watched a hockey game, I watched the Pittsburgh Pirates because Sidney Crosby was just so much fun to watch on the ice. So I would watch him occasionally, not really understanding how the game was played or how anything was. Like, it got to the point, if Sidney Crosby was subbed out of a game, I would just turn the channel. You know, I watched for him because I enjoyed watching him play the game. Because you could tell, even if you don't know anything about a sport, you can sense when somebody is just dominant and the best at what they do, right? I'm not a soccer fan, but if I turn on the World Cup and I'm seeing Ronaldo or I'm seeing Lionel Messi play, you know, you can tell those guys are just absolutely dominant at what they do. So I became a Red Sox fan because I was a Celtics fan and because Dustin Pedroia became my favorite player. When I really started paying attention to sports was when he was a rookie for the Red Sox. He was a short, you know, tiny little guy, 5'6", 5'7", playing second base for the Red Sox. And I loved that because I was a small guy and watched him dominate and be an all-star, rookie of the year, eventually won an AL MVP. You know, that's why I became a Red Sox fan. It wasn't because they were good or anything. It was because of Dustin Pedroia. And I loved watching him play. I loved watching a little guy succeed and be the best at what he did. So, yeah, with that, I've always been more of a Chiefs fan than a Royals fan because of my Red Sox fandom and because I just find the game of football more entertaining than I do the game of basketball. So it would have to be the Chiefs, no doubt about it.
And this is my perspective on it. This is coming from a Cardinal fan. I'd rather see the Royals win another championship because the amount of buzz that it created in the city of Kansas City with them winning the world title in 2015 after waiting 30 years to do so, winning their last title in 1985, I think it'd be nice to just kind of see the fruits of their rewards just come to fruition, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, right now the Royals are undergoing a rebuild right now. I would just love for them to see that rebuild reap another championship, another reward. Obviously, the Chiefs right now, they've been good for the duration of the past decade. I mean, they were still good whenever Alex Smith was their quarterback, and now they're on that next level of Super Bowl contenders with now Patrick Mahomes. The Royals had their flash in the pan in 2015 and have been just kind of meh since. So
that's how it goes with small market teams.
That's
which
true.
Which is another part of the MLB that I don't respect.
Oh, man. Gosh, I can't. I will definitely ask Lucas tomorrow about what he thinks about this lockout.
And that might be another part of it for me is, you know, I love the Royals and I want, you know, love to see the Royals win. But when small market teams win without a salary cap, right, with the payroll scale that they have right now in Major League Baseball, when a small market team wins a World Series, that tells the MLB front office that what they're doing is okay, that they can continue to, in my eyes, screw over the players in Major League Baseball. And I'm not okay with that. And the players, the teams in Major League Baseball, and I'm not okay with that. The NFL has a salary cap. Each player has a level playing field. That's a lot of the respect I have.
Say, every other sport has a salary cap or at least something of that nature. I know there's like a luxury tax in the National Basketball Association along with a salary cap. So it's the fact that baseball is not there yet. I mean, gosh, this is old man thinking. We have got to move on. We've got to get players rightfully compensated and we can't just be giving out World Series trophies to teams that have bigger pockets. Because it's impossible. It legitimately is impossible. Besides the outliers of the Oakland A's and the Tampa Bay Rays, and by the way, those teams have yet to win a World Series in this past, you know, millennium. Besides those two teams, you cannot be competitive for a long span of time if you're a small market team, and that's got to change, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
All right, who do you got? Or what do you got for this Would You Rather Wednesday?
All right, so I figured this was a good question to ask you, considering all of the turnover we're seeing. College coaches going to different jobs, college coaches leaving for the NFL, some discussion of NFL coaches maybe going back to the college level. So here's my Would You Rather for you. Would you rather coach a college or a professional team?
Very good question. I would say I'd rather coach a college team because the atmosphere of it is electric. I think it's just a little bit better than the NFL. I think even though it is, National Football League, it's the top of the top, I still think you can get paid pretty close to what you would make in the NFL.
So if you're saying if you were going to be a coach, you would be an NFL coach or a football coach?
I would be I'd pick a college as a football coach.
College football coach.
Because for me, like I said, the atmosphere I think is just better. I think you have a much more big of a following, I believe, in college football than you would in the NFL. And I'm pretty sure the NFL and college, even though, like I said, the NFL, it's the mecca. It's the top of the top of, you know, football in general. I still think you can make pretty close money to what you would make in the NFL. And here's the thing, dude, and I've always loved this statement. 1% of all athletes, or 1% of all people, will make it to the NFL. I would much rather coach life values and how to be a better person through football to someone that's 18 to 22 than try to coach grown men with different personalities and different goals and different mantras or whatever. I would much rather have an impact on someone at that age group and, of course, try to win football games at the college level than, say, try to install those same values into a grown man in the National Football League.
Mm.
I know it's a little bit sentimental, and, of course, it's a sports program here, but the one thing that often gets forgotten about these college football coaches, yeah, and, of course, it's easy to forget whenever you got big names like Oklahoma, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, you know, insert Power 5 school in which they produce numerous NFL talents. There's still 30, 40, 50 other guys on those teams that won't ever play a snap in the NFL.
Yeah.
What do you think they'll take out of their college experience? The fact of how good they were at football or how good they were as a person? How much of a better person they are now than when they entered the program? That's why I'd want to be a college football coach, because I feel like I could impact a lot more lives coaching young men to be great men in a society than try to instill those same values and win football games at the National Football League, at the National Football level.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would, I'm a basketball guy, so college basketball would be, you know, if I had that option. Now, obviously, I won't, but I would really much rather prefer to be a college basketball coach. I love the NBA. I love watching the NBA. I look at it from like you said, the atmospheres behind it. I mean, an NBA arena is still very exciting and the fans get into it, but there's nothing like a college basketball arena, a packed house against a rivalry team or an in-conference opponent. There's nothing quite like that, you know? And like you said, to be able to increase the talent, first of all, of these 18 to 22-year-old kids, you know, that come in with a ton of talent out of high school and be able to help them progress into the players that they want to be, but also, as you said, to be able to improve their lives as men and women. You know, and that's, I say college basketball. I don't care if it's men's or women's college basketball, to be honest. I think they're both fantastic sports, and both have a ton of talent, and they're so much fun to watch and would be so much fun to coach. You know, when I was in college, I worked for my college's women's team, running intramurals, doing scouting reports, and helping with recruiting and things like that. So I understand full well what you're saying. There's nothing quite like the college level. With 18 to 22-year-old kids that just left home for the first time, they're not with their parents or their grandparents, their brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles. They're out on their own for the first time in their lives. To be able to go in and be that sort of father figure or that, you know, that parental role in those 3 or 4 years, if they stay that long, you know, college sports has moved more towards, you know, one and dones in college basketball, especially, and things like that. But to be able to have that kind of impact on a person, you know, is so vital to a young person's upbringing. It would be an absolute honor to be able to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I will say this, and I will take this to my grave. You will never learn more life lessons than you will failing or succeeding, for that matter, when you play sports, whether it be intramural, junior high school, college, or what have you. Something that was always taught to me by all the coaches that I worked with was the fact that the score of tonight's game or the games this year, the games next year, they won't matter 20 to 30 years from now, okay? No one's going to care that, you know, I'm being theoretical in saying this because I never played on the baseball team, but no one's going to care that I batted three-hole, hit 450 with, you know, eight home runs and this many RBIs in this season, and we went thus far, and we won a state championship. Yeah, sure, the picture's nice on the board. You get remembered for it. You get that accolade in of itself gets remembered. But the people about them, they don't. They don't care what you did on that team from a statistical standpoint. They care about who you were as a person on that team and who you are now.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things will shape you into who you are and who and how people judge who you are. So, gosh, that got deep really quickly. But, I mean, hey, it's good to have conversations like this. It really is, because it's so often forgotten whenever we see the scores or whatever. I mean, and even with, like I said, with all this college football playoff turnover, it's easy to forget why these guys are here in the first place. Obviously, of course, they love what they're doing. They wouldn't do it without it, though. I'm with a lot of money they're making. I'm not sure, you know, maybe you could force me to be a college football playoff coach, but I'm, of course, being facetious and saying so. They do it because they love it. And I know they want to win football games. I know they want to have these accolades, but I'm sure deep down their real meaning is trying to change the lives of these young men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good conversation as always. I miss doing this, at least on a regular basis. But hey, if our name gets called for, say, sports talk or whatever, we got to fill in. We got to do our business, and then we got to move on. We're indispensable, my friend. We have to load manage ourselves.
Yeah, something like that.
Because if we record a podcast and then we go to sports talk, we're just like, well, what do we talk about? We just recorded this 2 hours ago, you know. Now, of course, we all appreciate those who have listened here to this edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast. Once again, folks, stay tuned for tomorrow, because we'll be making our NFL Week 14 picks with former Major League Baseball pitcher Lucas Harrell and stand-up comedian Chuck Booms from the great shores of Lake Erie. So be on the lookout for that. Logan, always appreciate it. Stay sane. I'll talk to you tomorrow, my friend.
Certainly will.
For Logan Weber, I'm Matthew Rizzo. This has been the Wednesday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast. Don't let anyone tell you the odds whatsoever, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Fruit Loops are all the same flavor.